I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC, and this is the news.
We're all in this together.
A Thanksgiving message from our next president, his thoughts on surviving the COVID crisis, and the shared sacrifice we all need to make this holiday season. No breaks, no rest, no time off.
We're his extended family, because they can't be here.
Happy birthday.
Frontline workers, in their own words. Lame duck surprise. President Trump announces the full pardon of Michael Flynn. Who's next on his list?
This is our Shark Tank over here.
Plus, shopping with sharks. How America's malls are getting creative during the age of COVID-19.
Live from CNBC Global Headquarters. The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Good evening. For many of us, Thanksgiving won't be the same tomorrow. Not close. It's a holiday centered on bringing family together and friends with us from near and far, and that's what this virus thrives on. So whether you're serving up turkey or ordering takeout or Zooming it all this year, remember, the pandemic is ripping through cities and towns from coast to coast, and the data shows it has no signs at all of slowing down. Just yesterday, 88,000 people in America were in hospitals sick with COVID. It's the 15th straight day that hospitalizations hit another all-time high. That's from the COVID Tracking Project. And deaths, they're on the rise, too. The U.S. reported more than 2,100 people died just yesterday, the most deaths since May, according to Johns Hopkins. The numbers are obviously troubling. But the doctors and scientists assure us there is a light at the end of this dark tunnel. 2 weeks from tomorrow, the FDA will meet to discuss whether to greenlight Pfizer's vaccine. And if it does, the government plans to ship out almost 6.5 million doses to communities around the country. Healthcare workers will be the first to get it, we're told. Right now, states and cities are gearing up for the first round of vaccines. But health experts are facing a daunting task. Got to get those doses from the production lines to the arms of millions of Americans. Monsef Slaoui now. He's Operation Warp Speed's chief science advisor, which means basically the big man in charge of everything. One question. Everybody has it. When is normal again?
Well, we hope that we would have vaccinated 70 or 80% of the U.S. population by May or June of 2021. So I would hope that summer should be substantially back to normal.
That sounds wonderful. You know, that makes me warm all inside, like summer does. But question, it took 9 months to test 180 million testing doses across America. Now we have to come up with 300 million vaccine doses time two. So 600 vaccine doses and get them from there to arms. May, June, summer? Really?
Yeah, so it's an important challenge. However, people need to know that every year between 140 and 180 million doses of flu vaccine are produced, distributed, inoculated in the U.S. population in a period that goes between the month of August and the month of maybe January. So, you know, we may be doubling that number and over the period of time, but, you know, it's not going from scratch, which was very different than the testing. So the channels exist, the warehouses exist, and we have, you know, 25 sites that are involved in the manufacturing and the filling of these vaccines. So, you know, it's a big challenge, of course, but we hope and we think we're going to achieve it.
Another thankful answer. Now, even if you get those doses where they need to go, how do you get enough people convinced, yeah, I should take this, because the polls look ugly?
Yes, it's a great concern. And really, it's very unfortunate that the political context in which the development of this vaccine took place has made it or exacerbated the hesitancy and the lack of trust that comes from the fact that we went very fast. But people need to understand, first, that we went very fast because we built on 10, 15 years of discovery and development work that took place around the platform technologies, the basics in which these vaccine, by which these vaccines are made, the understanding of SARS-1 and MERS. So we didn't start from a blank piece of paper. please keep your ears open and your mind open, listen, and then judge on the facts and the data. I feel confident if we do that, that most Americans will agree to be vaccinated.
That sounds so comforting. Again, one more thing. I read this morning that you said you're done. Why are you leaving?
Well, I didn't say I'm done. I said I would be done once we have two vaccines approved, the rest of the vaccine portfolio, we have six of them, well advanced in their phase three trials, the manufacturing site running, the processes established and fixed. And also when we have two medicines approved, and we already have two medicines approved. So probably in the next month or two would be the time for me to move on. Frankly, mostly because my value add will have decreased. I will always remain available to help and support as needed. This is a voluntary role. I overnight let go everything I was doing, and 24 hours a day, 7 days a week over the last 6 months and a half been doing this.
Mansif Slaoui, thank you. Many healthcare workers spending Thanksgiving on the job, taking care of very sick patients with COVID. NBC News went inside Sparrow Hospital in Lansing, Michigan to see what it's like. That's an hour west of Detroit. Hospitalizations there have doubled since the beginning of November, according to the COVID Tracking Project. The nurses and doctors here in this place, tired and overwhelmed, but still doing their best like so many. NBC News' Ellison Barber, live in Lansing. Ellison, you went inside that hospital. What'd you see?
Yeah, Shepard, it really did not take us very long once we got on the critical care floor here at Sparrow Hospital to stumble on a moment of just genuine love and compassion. What you're about to see was all for a man who has been a patient in the ICU here with COVID-19 for 31 days, and he's one of the few patients to survive after being placed on a ventilator.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear William. Happy birthday to you. You bet. Happy birthday.
At a time when most patients in the hospital, COVID or not, are unable to have any sort of visitor, caregivers are spending their holidays away from their families and their children to make sure strangers have a hand to hold, someone to remember their birthday when they need it most.
You know, people see it as a holiday, but for us caregivers, if it's a holiday, it's just another day for us to make sure our patients are well taken care of and safe. I'm sorry. like I said, it's just very emotional. It's hard to answer that question and not get teary-eyed because we do sacrifice a lot.
As of this morning, seven patients here at Sparrow Hospital who have COVID-19 are currently on a ventilator. That man celebrating his birthday today was one of the first patients, the first patient, in about 2.5 months to successfully come off of a ventilator. So today, Shepard, they weren't just celebrating any old birthday. They were celebrating the fact that this man, despite the odds, is alive. Shep.
A celebration for sure. Ellison Barber, thanks so much. A public service announcement about gathering, not from health officials or governors, but from a family in Texas. They were so COVID careful. And then,
2 weeks ago, I had family over at my house for some cake for my wife's birthday. I didn't think anything bad would happen.
I went to my nephew's house and loved seeing my family. But now I'm fighting against COVID-19.
Fighting still. More than a dozen of them later tested positive. One family. Alexa Aragona is now part of that family and is with us. Alexa, you weren't at the party, but you dropped your mom off there. What do you want other people to know through this PSA and this appearance?
Please do not gather in small and close places with those that do not live in your household. We were so careful. It only takes one person to feel ill and under the weather to have an outbreak in your family.
You say you were careful. So masks and distancing and washing and all the things we all try to do.
Correct. I mean, my mother even made masks and shipped them to multiple parts of this country. And even then, she still was the worst in my family with COVID-19.
And then you just got tired of it all. We all do.
I don't know. Yeah, we got not necessarily tired, but just our guard fell. Yeah. We just got comfortable and fell back into normal habits.
And so you went to the party and everything felt great. And then?
And then 12 were there tested COVID positive, and then affected three more of my family.
I know your mom was bad. How is she?
She's doing better. Last night wasn't great. She had some heart issues because she was very scared from the tornadoes that happened here in Arlington, Texas. So she's going to fight this long term.
You know, this happens sadly to many thousands and tens of thousands of people. Not everybody does all this. Where'd you get this and why are you doing this? And tell me.
I work for the city of Arlington, and this is like a natural extension of what I do for my job in communication and legislative affairs. My family knows that it's a great project of mine to make sure that our residents in Arlington have a communication both in Spanish and in English about COVID-19. When this unfortunate circumstance happened to my family, we came together and discussed one by one what we think and if it was possible. And they decided that our story of pain and suffering was gladly put in the forefront of the public so we can all learn a little lesson from it.
Alexa Aragonés and all the Aragonés, good luck to you guys. Thank you. Lots of love.
Thank you.
Well, yesterday, President Trump pardoned a Thanksgiving bird. Today, a former national security advisor who pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his contacts with a Russian ambassador. Flynn the felon, Corn the turkey, both free to fly now. Michael Flynn twice pleaded guilty to lying to the feds about his communications with Russia's Sergei Kislyak. He's been fighting in court to take back that plea. The top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, accuses the president of abusing his pardon power to, quote, protect those who lie to cover up for him, unquote. The Justice Department calls the pardon appropriate. Kayla Tausche now. Kayla, the president has been strongly hinting for a while he was going to do this. So surprised? Not really.
No, Shep, for years, President Trump has called General Flynn a very fine man who should be totally exonerated by authorities. And just this evening, the White House put out a statement saying that Flynn should have never been prosecuted in the first place. President Trump has long believed that Flynn was treated unfairly by law enforcement, and that view also privately influenced other policy decisions. For instance, two senior administration officials tell me President Trump removed watchdog Glenn Fine this spring from leading coronavirus aid oversight because Fine paused but kept open an investigation into Flynn at the Defense Department, even as the Justice Department opened and then closed its own criminal case. The Flynn case sparked the firing of FBI Director Jim Comey and the hiring of Special Counsel Robert Mueller. It also marked the first of a handful of associates from Trump's 2016 campaign to be convicted of miscellaneous and largely unrelated crimes. Those include Roger Stone, whose seven-year sentence was commuted in July, Steve Bannon and Paul Manafort, who chaired Trump's campaign at different times, and Deputy Chair Rick Gates. Those individuals have not been pardoned. So far, President Trump has used his power to pardon less frequently than any other president in modern times. But that could change, with the Flynn pardon potentially ushering a new and final wave of clemencies to come. And Shep, now questions about whether President Trump could choose to preemptively pardon himself because the constitutional power to pardon is so broad.
Yeah, but we all know that hasn't been tested for the Supreme Court. So I guess there are a lot of things he could do. But and I wonder, is there like a short list of who else he might be thinking of pardoning? I mean, all the presidents have done it.
Well, certainly. And President Trump has done it less than other presidents. We just showed you a list of the campaign officials who have been convicted for different crimes. Steve Bannon, for instance, his former White House chief strategist. At one time, he was the campaign chair. He was charged with a crime related to funding that was advertised, the feds allege falsely, for funding for the president's border wall. Then you also have Paul Manafort and Rick Gates, who were separately sentenced for other crimes. And so there is a list of people who are in President Trump's former inner circle that he has not yet chosen to pardon. And we'll see whether he chooses to do so in the next few weeks.
Kayla, happy Thanksgiving. Thank you. A Thanksgiving Eve speech, President-elect Joe Biden imploring Americans to limit the size of our family gatherings and keep up the fight against COVID-19.
I know the country has grown weary of the fight. We need to remember we're at war with a virus, not with one another, not with each other. This is the moment where we need to steel our spines, redouble our efforts, and recommit ourselves to the fight. We have to try to slow the growth of this virus. We owe it to the doctors and the nurses and other frontline workers.
The president-elect's team confirms now he'll get his first presidential daily intelligence briefing on Monday, now that the current administration has stopped blocking the transition. Committing crimes from behind bars. Tonight, how some notorious inmates, whose names you'll know, scammed the government out of millions and millions of your dollars meant for unemployed Americans. Plus holiday shopping. COVID can't stop this.
What we're finding is that folks are wanting to be online.
High expectations. Black Friday and Cyber Monday spending expected to break records. We go inside the numbers. Plus, a quick history lesson. How this unusual holiday compares to the pandemic Thanksgiving of 1918.
And a salute tonight to the brave men and women serving overseas this Thanksgiving Eve. We are so thankful for all of you. Ah, Black Friday. You sleep off your Thanksgiving turkey coma, then you wait in line for hours at the mall and fight your way in to get a dollar off that slinky. Sadly, not this year. The pandemic replacing door busting with online shopping, a trend not new, but certainly accelerated. Take a look at this chart. Black Friday online sales, more than $7 billion last year, according to Adobe. So how's the pandemic going to change the shopping this year? Here's CNBC's Bertha Coombs.
Retailers will be closed Thanksgiving, but with rolling Black Friday deals all month, Americans have already racked up $62 billion in online holiday sales in the first 3 weeks of November, according to Adobe Analytics. Still, this weekend is when holiday shopping hits overdrive. More than 100 million of us expected to shop on Black Friday, according to the National Retail Federation.
If we look at Saturday and Sunday, there seems to be a preference for in-store versus online on those days. The other 2 days of the weekend, what we're finding is that folks are wanting to be online.
This year, we're not up for Black Friday doorbuster crowds. 3 out of 4 Americans surveyed by Deloitte say no thanks.
I've maybe gone out for a doorbuster on Black Friday or like late Thanksgiving night if something was really enticing, but there's no way this year I would go near the stores.
The result? An even bigger shift to online. Adobe estimates we'll spend a record $10 billion at Black Friday and another $12.7 billion Cyber Monday, the biggest day for online sales of the year. But some retailers, like the parent company of Old Navy, are worried about the rest of the season. With rising COVID cases and millions of Americans like Alyssa Cordero unemployed during this pandemic facing a cash crunch.
I know that the holidays aren't about presents and that they're about being there for your family, but they are tokens of love and appreciation, and it makes me feel really bad that for all that my family has given me throughout the years, I'm now the broke, poor, you know, kid in the family.
You know, Alyssa says she's prioritizing her spending for a test to make sure she can safely join her family. And Shep, she is encouraged and hopeful that the vaccine will turn things around next year.
Man, I bet the whole retail industry is hopeful for that.
Very much so. You know, the CEO of Macy's, in fact, on the earnings call last week said he thinks once we get that vaccine and a lot of people are inoculated, that you're going to see pent-up demand for people wanting to buy clothes and go out and dress up. Of course, department stores like Macy's have been struggling for years. This is a time for them to try to really.
A digital blackout on the East Coast knocking out a big chunk of the internet today. And that's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. Amazon's cloud service with a major outage. AWS serves as the backbone for many websites and apps. The problem disrupted companies like Roku, Ring Doorbell, Glassdoor, and Sonos. New York City's transit system also impacted a bit. It's not hitting all of Amazon's cloud customers. No hit at all for Apple, Slack, and Netflix. Tesla recalling more than 9,000 Model X and Model Y electric vehicles. The company citing a potential issue with the roof and the tightness of the bolts that keep it on the roof. The recall covers Tesla models made between September of 2015 and July of 2016. And on this Thanksgiving Eve, Michael Jordan is giving back, the NBA legend donating $2 million to Feeding America. His heirness taking money he made from his documentary, The Last Dance, to help food banks in MJ towns, the Carolinas, and Chicago. On Wall Street, the Dow off 173, back below 30,000. Disappointing jobs data, the key reason for the slide. S&P down just about 6, and the NASDAQ, I don't know, up 57. A warning for holiday shoppers, not everything that glitters is gold. And dozens of families homeless after an overnight tornado on a CNBC trip coast to coast. Texas. An overnight tornado leaves behind a path of destruction in Arlington. Trees toppled, homes flattened. Firefighters say seven buildings collapsed. Among them, a church and three apartment complexes. Nobody badly hurt. New York. Tis the season for ripoffs. These are just some of the counterfeit goods cops say they seized at Kennedy Airport. Jerseys, watches, eyewear, and more. Federal authorities warning people ahead of Black Friday.
If the price is too good to be true, it probably is.
New Jersey. A big promotion for a hero cop who saved an officer during a shootout. This is Marjorie Jordan running toward gunfire and pulling a wounded officer to safety. Happened in Jersey City last year, and Sergeant Jordan is now a lieutenant. That makes her the highest-ranking black woman ever on Jersey City's police force. Oklahoma. The town of Chickasha, 40 miles outside of Oklahoma City, known for its Festival of Lights, and now this.
Do you know what this is? This is a lamp!
A leg lamp. Think Major Award from A Christmas Story. Only this one is 40 feet tall, inflatable, and sits at the end of Main Street. Mega Major. Whatever it takes to kick off the holiday season on this CNBC trip, coast to coast. The orchestra was on strike. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. Local leaders issuing more COVID restrictions ahead of the holiday. In El Paso, the county judge imposed a curfew, 10 o'clock at night till 5 in the morning. Starts tonight, lasts till Monday. In Newark, New Jersey, a 10-day stay-at-home advisory began today. The mayor there says the city will close streets from 8 at night till 3 in the morning to anyone who doesn't live there. In Louisiana, the governor ordering most bars to shut down indoor service until after Christmas. The restrictions come as millions of people have been hitting the roads and the airports this week. CNBC's Phil LeBeau live at Chicago O'Hare. Phil, quiet day, I'm guessing.
Quiet is the right word for it, Shep. You know, usually the day before Thanksgiving, it's a madhouse here at O'Hare, as it is at so many other airports. Oh, not the case today. Take a look at this. I mean, this is ridiculously quiet for the day before Thanksgiving. You never see it like this. I mean, this is what it might be like on a Monday in the middle of the day. Here's what's happening with this year's Thanksgiving travel rush. First of all, it is going to be the slowest since the 08 recession. The CDC discouraging visits is one factor that's contributing to this. You also have a number of people who have canceled their trips at the last minute. And those who are flying, when we've talked to them, they're all saying the same thing. They're taking the COVID-19 restrictions in stride.
Planes are packed, but everything's fine. They're cleaning, handing out sanitizer. It's all good.
Flight attendants just made sure that you kept your mask on and it was fine.
No, I wasn't nervous. The airplane was maybe, I don't know, 30% full, and it was quiet. So, yeah, it's been fine.
They were following procedures. It was fine. I felt safe.
One other reason why it's a little quieter today, it's the fact that so many people in the past would have to be in an office, Shep, until Tuesday or Wednesday, and this was the day they could get away. no longer the case with flexible work schedules. I think a lot of people opted to go last weekend or a couple of days ago. That's why we saw strong travel numbers last weekend. So it is overall sort of a strange Thanksgiving in terms of how the airlines are dealing with things. And the fact that it's so slow really drives that home this year.
Bet Sunday's different. Phil LeBeau, thank you. History helps sometimes. Perspective it can lend. This whole pandemic thing is new to us, but it's not new to America. A century ago, in November of 1918, Woodrow Wilson was president. Tiger Rag and I'm Chasing Rainbows spun on the phonograph. And Tarzan of the Apes had been all the rage at the picture show before the theaters closed for the Spanish flu. This time, 102 years ago, H1N1 was on a killing spree all across America. It would eventually leave more than 600,000 people dead in our nation of 100 million Americans. Michael Beschloss now, author, wise man, NBC News presidential historian. Michael, here and now, reflecting upon then, what can we learn?
Well, what we can learn is that during a century, we didn't learn that much because what happened was that in 1918, Woodrow Wilson, just as you were saying, Shep, didn't have a national policy on things like masks and social distancing. So basically, people decided what to do almost locality by locality. And the result was this thing spread really badly. Thanksgiving 1918 was not a happy time.
Hey, but, and what were they doing on Thanksgiving in 1918? Were there masks and distancing, or what was it?
Some people were, but most people were not. And there were actually, there was something called the Anti-Masking League in San Francisco and elsewhere, people who thought that this was an unfair intrusion of the federal government. What does that sound like?
Well, nothing I've ever heard of. And right. I wonder what it was like maybe by Christmas after that Thanksgiving of gathering.
Well, there were a lot of big gatherings, including even in Washington, D.C., and the result was that every time there was one, this really spread. There were some parades, for instance, Thanksgiving parades, where some people wore masks, some did not, and there was no social distancing. And the result was that this pandemic went on for years. Woodrow Wilson, who nowadays, you know, would be talking about it, people would demand that he put the forces of the federal government against this pandemic, never gave a single speech, never told people how to protect themselves.
Mm. Wow. Michael Beschloss, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Be well.
Thank you, Michael. Meghan Markle is speaking about for the first time now about her miscarriage. She says she and Prince Harry lost a child over the summer, you may have heard, but her powerful words on grief and taking care of each other are coming. Plus, a god among men, gone at age 60. The world reacts to the soccer legend Diego Maradona's death. And it's been 258 days, but college hoops is back. Come on, Rebels. Plus, a COVID word of warning. Stop messing with Steel City, COVID. Black and yellow will slay you. What COVID's doing to sports, I hate you.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith. Back in 90 seconds.
Johns Hopkins estimates that on average, one in five pregnancies ends in miscarriage. Today, Meghan Markle wrote about hers. In a New York Times op-ed, she said, "I knew as I clutched my firstborn child that I was losing my second." She and husband Prince Harry lost their child in July. Meghan Markle says she's speaking out because too often women and their partners grieve all alone. Here's NBC's Sarah Harmon.
Tonight, the Duchess of Sussex discussing a tragedy that many families don't after losing what would have been her second child with husband Prince Harry. Writing in a New York Times op-ed, losing a child means carrying an almost unbearable grief experienced by many but talked about by few. The conversation remains taboo, she says, and is riddled with unwarranted shame. In the past, Meghan has been candid about her struggles.
Thank you for asking, because not many people have asked if I'm okay.
Recalling the moment she was asked by a journalist during a grueling royal tour whether she was okay, and encouraging Americans to ask each other, Tonight, the Duchess joins a growing chorus of high-profile women speaking publicly about their own experiences of pregnancy loss. Model and cookbook author Chrissy Teigen opening up about her complete and utter grief after losing a baby at 20 weeks, sharing intimate photos from the hospital as she and husband John Legend mourned the baby they named Jack. Michelle Obama, too, speaking out about her miscarriage and fertility struggles on ABC.
I felt like I failed because I didn't know how common miscarriages were because we don't talk about them.
In fact, they are incredibly common. As many as 10 to 20% of pregnancies end in miscarriage, according to the Mayo Clinic. But it remains a taboo subject, women and their partners often grieving behind closed doors. Tonight, Megan is speaking out against the stigma, reminding others they're not alone. Buckingham Palace isn't commenting, calling it a private, personal matter. But Megan's point is just that. The pressure to keep pregnancy loss private isn't helping anyone. Shep?
Thanks so much. Anger over a police crackdown and one of soccer's greatest ever is mourned as we go around the world in 80 seconds.
Argentina, tributes pouring in for soccer legend Diego Maradona. Dead after a heart attack at his home, weeks after brain surgery, the country's president declaring 3 days of national mourning. Maradona's brilliance leading Argentina to a 1986 World Cup win against England with the most infamous goal of all time.
Looked like handball, that.
The hand of God, it was called. Maradona admitted to it in 2005 with no regrets. 4 minutes after that score, he pulled off what FIFA called the goal of the century. Off the pitch, he struggled with drugs, friended mobsters and dictators. But his country and friends never stopped loving him. Fellow legend Pele tweeting, "One day I hope we can play ball together in the sky." Yemen, a cyclone killed 7 fishermen off Socotra Island. They drowned when their boat capsized, the storm unleashing floodwaters, leaving cars stranded in muddy waters. France, outrage in Paris after police fired tear gas to clear out a migrant camp. A riot squad faced off with protesters who called out the poor treatment of the migrants. Germany, a restaurant owner protesting the COVID lockdown with hundreds of stuffed pandas. The owner said he wanted to put some life back into his business. A new way to protest as we go around the world in 80 seconds.
The Pittsburgh Steelers are 10-0, the very best start for one of the most successful franchises in the history of the National Football League. So Thanksgiving night is theirs. Prime time. Huge audience at Heinz Field. So excited, but because 2020, it's COVID canceled. Actually postponed until Sunday, but the virus hit Baltimore. 7 players positive or in quarantine, so the league needs to trace and contact. It's the second time COVID has gone against the Steelers' opponent to attack their winning streak. Juju Smith-Schuster tweeted, "First, the NFL takes away our bye week because another team can't get their COVID situation together, and now they take away our Thanksgiving primetime game for the same reason." SMH. Same, same, same. It targets success, clearly. Just took out Nick Saban, too. Bama's head coach is COVID positive again. He says he won't be on the sideline with the Tide's perfect season on the line against Auburn on Saturday. War Eagle. This time, he's got more reliable PCR test. Says he has a runny nose and that they'll get through it. COVID didn't spare college hoops back in March, and it certainly is not now. The new season tipped off today at last, but games already falling off the schedules one after another. Duke and Georgia both scratched games against Gardner-Webb this week after that team reported a positive case. And the women's powerhouse UConn postponed its first 4 games and suspended all team activities because COVID. One thing to keep in mind, though, there are 32 NCAA conferences, and they operate across 50 states, which all have different COVID restrictions and safety protocols. So getting the teams on the court, it's complicated. CNBC's Eric Chemi is with us. How do all these conferences move forward, Eric?
Shep, that's the thing. It's not the NCAA who controls all of college basketball. Each conference gets to set its own rules. The Ivy League, for example, simply canceled basketball completely this year but that's because sports, just not a huge revenue generator for that conference. But the bigger marquee programs, when you think Duke, Kentucky, Syracuse, UCLA, Kansas, those schools, they rely on basketball television money. It subsidizes so many other activities on campus and helps bring in even more money in the form of alumni donations, corporate sponsorships, and better college rankings from increased high school applications. TV rights for the basketball season are about $1 billion, so they can't afford to miss a second straight season. They need to get in as many games as possible right now, reschedule as many games as possible if COVID causes cancellations, and most importantly, they need to make sure they can get to March, because the March Madness tournament is where almost all their money is made, Shep.
Oh man, it's going to be hard. What has college basketball learned from all the other sports, Eric?
College basketball is actually most closely following what Major League Baseball did. That means there's no bubble for the regular season. They're going to let teams travel for games. They know players will test positive. They know games will get canceled. But they saw baseball deal with the same issue, and they still completed their season. And honestly, a canceled regular season game, it just doesn't cost that much TV money. But losing playoff games, that's a different story. Way too much money at stake. Baseball created playoff bubbles for that reason, and the NCAA will put March Madness all at a single site to reduce COVID risk. Shut back to you.
Eric, thanks a lot. You guys want to meet at the mall? Says no one ever. It's one of the reasons they're in big trouble. And they're pulling out all the stops to try to get you back. Up next, making malls, like, cool again. Plus, maybe everyone's at Target getting Christmas lights. The company tells us people are buying decorations earlier than ever. Makes sense. Stuck at home. I mean, there's nothing else. And like tomorrow night, there's no Steelers. So what in the heck are we supposed to do tomorrow night? I'm tired of it. If online shopping is the gut punch, COVID could be the knockout blow. The shopping mall taking a real beating, and it's bad. According to Core Site Research, a group that tracks retail trends, 250 malls across America at risk of shutting down. Others, they're trying to Hail Mary makeovers, using sharks, doctors even, snow to lure shoppers back. Here's CNBC's Frank Holland.
America's malls are in trouble.
There's no question. Adapt or die. I mean, malls are in bad shape right now.
In 2012, there were over 1,500 malls in the U.S. Today, one-third of them are gone. Now we're down to about 1,000. And a recent report estimates that 25% of those will close in the next 3 to 5 years.
Consumers are just not shopping at malls as much as they used to now that they've discovered Amazon, eBay, Pinterest, Etsy.
The global pandemic and surging cases as we go into what should be the busiest shopping season of the year, only accelerating the problem. Facing possible extinction, mall owners across the nation are being forced to get creative. From dreaming up an indoor ski slope.
So we built one.
In a mall.
In a mall.
To replacing old school department stores with new hotels, mega churches, and even giant water parks.
It's critical to the mall of the future that we continue to bring in new and creative uses.
Brookfield Property Retail owns and operates over 170 malls, the second most in the U.S.
The biggest risk to all malls and all retail operations is a fear of change. We embrace change. We embrace the need to adapt and evolve.
And this is our Shark Tank over here.
Brookfield even embracing shopping with sharks.
This is our bird exhibit where kids can interact with the birds.
Wes Hawes is the CEO of Blue Zoo, an aquarium and zoo located at a Brookfield-owned mall in Oklahoma City.
A lot of what my business does for the mall is it brings traffic in.
This is Wes's second location inside a mall, and he's about to start construction on a third in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Once we get past COVID-19, certainly more experience-based tenants could certainly be a solution.
Aquariums won't be the only thing driving people to the malls in the future.
Well, we're in a very different kind of service business.
Mall space leased to healthcare tenants like this full-service medical clinic inside the Mall of America in Minnesota have grown by over 90% in the last 5 years.
Malls that are strictly focused on retail are going to struggle. It's going to be a challenge for them as they look forward. I believe the biggest challenge is the adaptation to change, to be very agile and try new things. And that's going to help us fight through all these changes.
And COVID is just another challenge. According to a new poll from Deloitte, nearly half of all shoppers plan to avoid malls altogether. But in response, malls are stepping up their safety precautions, including this one here in South Carolina, where they're increasing cleaning and social distancing. And many major retailers are doing their part, widening aisles and increasing staffing for curbside pickup, and in some cases, adding lockers for contactless pickup. Shep?
Frank Holland, thanks. Speaking of, Thanksgiving is so great, isn't it? I mean, like normally. But in terms of decorations, it's really boring. I mean, nobody drives around looking at neighbors' turkeys and pies. Nobody I know. For decorations, we turn to Christmas. Lights and trees and silver bells and giant inflatable snowmen. And no surprise, this year people are really doing this. Here's CNBC's Andrea Day.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas at the LaGuire House in Coldwater, Michigan. In fact, Alyssa LaGuire started decking the halls right after Halloween while in quarantine following a COVID scare.
To help kind of just ease my mind and take my mind off of it, I figured it was a great time to start decorating.
Thankfully, her test results came back negative, and Alyssa managed to turn the experience into a positive.
That ritual of decorating and kind of changing your space gives you like a sense of normalcy until you have to, you know, go out the door and put your mask on again.
The LaGuires aren't the only ones craving normalcy. Some families are even enlisting professionals to help make spirits brighter.
I have a granddaughter, so I want her to see the lights because I don't know if Santa's going to be around.
So Aruna Kapoor and her family called Shack Shine to string up lights at their house. Kevin Young runs the New Jersey franchise, and he says requests started flooding in as early as October, unheard of in past years.
We're definitely seeing a demand to be bigger and brighter this year.
Shack Shine lit more than 4,000 homes across North America in 2019. This year, the company is on pace to double that.
I think however you can find to celebrate the holiday and just find some sort of joy, I think that's what we have to do right now.
Because after a year like 2020, we could all use a really bright Christmas. For the news, I'm Andrea Day.
Look both ways before you cross the road, wild animals. They never learn. Well, now, at least in one place, they don't have to. The wildlife-only bridge, keeping them alive and your car away from the body shop. But first, turkey trivia for you on this Thanksgiving Eve. Take a look at this map. These six states combined, Minnesota, Missouri, Arkansas, Indiana, Virginia, and North Carolina, account for 69% of all turkeys produced, it says here, produced in the United States. The more you know. It's working. A wildlife bridge in Utah getting the critters over a busy highway safe and sound. Look at that. The Parley's Canyon Overpass, about 15 minutes south of Salt Lake City. Everything from deer to mountain lions to bears making the trek across. Look at you. The bridge built in 2018. This new video showing the $5 million project is a roaring success. This is the state's first overpass built for wildlife. Crews put boulders and rocks around to make the animals feel more at home. Oh, there are also 6 miles of fencing to encourage them to use the bridge instead of getting squished in the road. A new class of students saved by the bell. The 90s sitcom making a comeback on Peacock, NBC's streaming service. It's free as a bird, Peacock. Most of the original gang is back. Zach, Slater, Kelly, and Jesse all returning to the halls of Bayside High. But there is a new storyline. Zach Morris is now the governor of California, and he's in big trouble for closing too many underfunded high schools. Those students sent to Bayside for a whole new set of adventures, but probably no brick-sized cell phones anymore. The Saved by the Bell reboot, streaming today on Peacock, free as a bird. On Thanksgiving, do you go around the table and say what you're thankful for? We do. But since I'm solo on the couch tomorrow, I'm thankful for my Geo and my dad and my pity pat and the rest of our families and our close friends. I'm thankful that we're all healthy and safe. I'm thankful for doctors and nurses and scientists and vaccines. I'm thankful for those who protect and serve us. I'm thankful for my new job and our team, and thankful every time Ole Miss wins and LSU loses, and for honesty, and for Lucia and chocolate. That's Lucia. And now you know the news. For this Wednesday, Thanksgiving Eve 2020, I'm Shepard Smith. Have a safe and happy Thanksgiving from all of us at CNBC. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.